J.J. Abrams is a writer and producer of TV shows and films that tend to be filled with lots of action and even more twists and turns. His first TV series, Felicity, didn't fall into that category, but Lost sure did. So did Alias, Mission Impossible 3, and Cloverfield. Next year, Abrams' new Star Trek movie will be released, with the hope it will reboot that franchise the way Dark Knight rebooted Batman. And tomorrow night on Fox, Abrams presents his latest TV series, Fringe. Before we hear the interview he recorded with our TV critic, David Bianculli, let's hear a scene from Fringe. Fringe is about an FBI agent named Olivia Dunham, played by Anna Torv, who teams up with a father-son team to investigate unusual phenomena. The father, played by John Noble, a somewhat mad scientist, has been locked in a mental institution. The estranged son, played by Joshua Jackson, believed his father was working on more mundane things like toothpaste, until Olivia explained what was really going on. Well, she sort of explained it.
He worked out of Harvard, but not on toothpaste. He was part of a classified U.S. Army experimental program called Kelvin Genetics. They gave him the resources to do whatever work he wanted, which was primarily in an area called fringe science.
When you say fringe science, you mean pseudoscience?
I suppose. Things like mind control, teleportation, astral projection, invisibility, genetic mutation, reanimation.
Well, excuse me for a sec. Reanimation. Really? So you're telling me what? My father was Dr. Frankenstein.
That was Anna Torv and Joshua Jackson in a scene from the pilot of Fringe. J.J. Abrams, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, J.J., why don't you start by explaining that explanation? What's going on in your show?
Fringe takes place in this sort of weird gray area where what we know to be true and what we know to be possible is sort of pushed just far enough that it's preposterous. And at the same time, every day, you know, you read in the paper online, you read about insane medical and scientific events that are occurring or breakthroughs that are made. And so we wanted to make sure that it's clear in the show that these are the kind of things, it's the sort of world that we will be playing with.
It seems like the pilot draws a little bit on the X-Files and a little bit on Altered States, and maybe even on some weird things that you wouldn't want to take credit for, like The Cell. What's the tone you're trying to set, and how much emphasis are you placing on the show's look and its sound?
I think that, first of all, the show, without question, was inspired by a whole slew of things. I was a huge fan of David Cronenberg films when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I loved Altered States. The Twilight Zone was my favorite show of all time. And certainly the idea of doing a series that is, on the one hand, a procedural, that is some mystery or crime that is solved every week, mixed with some kind of odd science fiction or genre, leads you, without question, to the X-Files. So the influences were enormous, and all those shows, you know, The Night Stalker and those movies relied heavily on the look and, mm-hmm. and the sound. Even the Cronenberg films, you know, the early ones may not have been as obviously stylized as something, you know, like The Cell, for example. The fact is that the visuals were the things that really landed often, you know, scanners, the guy's head exploding, and, you know, the things that he would do that were so insane, Videodrome, having, you know, characters reaching into their bodies and pulling out, you know, VHS tapes. It was
right.
Ridiculous. So to me, the what you see and what you hear, I mean, it's a visual medium and an oral medium. So I think that, you know, obviously we're trying to use that stuff as well as possible.
The first time you directed, I think, on television was an episode of Felicity. Mm-hmm. And that's not that long ago. Is that correct?
Yes, it was two episodes of Felicity, yeah.
So you just jump ahead not too many years, and instead of directing Carrie Russell, whom you helped make a star, you're directing Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible 3.
With Carrie Russell.
With Carrie Russell, yes. So what's the difference between becoming a director on a giant, giant movie set like that with such an established movie star and still doing the sort of directing that you want to do?
with Mission Impossible, it was an incredible thing. From the very beginning, Tom said to me, this is going to be your movie. And I was warned by a lot of people, smart, experienced people, you know, who said, listen, you got to be careful. I know so-and-so who worked with, you know, this other guy over here, and that was a nightmare, and this is an actor, producer, and that was, you know, and I was like, it's not going to happen this time. I can just tell. And I have to say, there was not a day on the set of that movie where he didn't stand by his word. And so the answer to your question, honestly, is when we did Felicity, and it was the first series that I was involved with, the actors were completely game and were wonderful and worked with Matt Reeves and myself to make the thing as good as it could be. And I found myself on the set of this big Hollywood blockbuster with my name on the director chair, and I was surrounded by actors, including, you know, one of the biggest in the world, who was doing nothing but trying to realize that vision I had. And I have to tell you, it is as surreal as the moment was when he asked me if I wanted to do it. The entire experience of directing the movie was equally surreal because it was the dream version of what you'd want. And I am beholden to him for that chance.
There's a dramatic technique you use at the beginning of that movie that you like a lot. I certainly like it a lot watching it as a viewer, which is throwing you into some point of the action at the very start and then doing flashbacks to get you back up to speed. I mean, Lost is virtually based on it. You did it in some episodes in Alias. And here it is starting this huge movie. What about that appeals to you?
I guess I like the puzzle nature of it. I love throwing an audience into a situation that you have to scramble to figure out. And then just as you're watching something that is a cliffhanger, you pull out of the scene and go to 48 hours earlier. And you're suddenly engaged in the minutiae of a moment in a way that you wouldn't be otherwise, because it's been informed with some sort of, you know, climactic moment yet to come. And there's something that is inherently fascinating to me about watching something with the awareness of where it goes. I mean, it's sort of, you know, when you watch, you know, news clips from the past and you're aware of the fate of that particular person, mm-hmm. or you know, you know, how it ended for that couple, or you know, whatever the situation. And there's something that sort of stirs emotions for me. And so it's not, look, I mean, ultimately what it is a gimmick, and we all, you know, have our gimmicks and things that we like to do, and you got to be careful. You can't do that kind of stuff too often. And I think, you know, I probably do, and it's one of those things that I, you know,
I enjoy it. I'll stick by you.
God bless you, first of all. And secondly, you know, at a certain point, you know, there are certain things that I guess begin to define the kind of work that someone does. And so maybe that's one of my, you know, stupid tricks. But the thing that I like about it is that you get to sort of have little mundane moments have real meaning, and you also start, as the audience member, you're figuring out how you get there at the same time as you're trying to figure out, well, how the hell is he or she going to get out of that one? So I like that it kind of engages your brain on a couple levels, and when it works, I think it can be a really effective device.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with writer, director, producer J.J. Abrams. You seem very, very interested in plot and the intricacies of plots and puzzles and things like that. Who were some of the authors that you enjoyed growing up? Who influenced you?
Well, I have to say that the thing that was the most impactful to me was it was more television than literature. And Rod Serling is the one author I can really point to. I mean, it's funny with Fringe, which was very much inspired by the movie Altered States, the sort of world of it, which was written by Padachevsky, who was a contemporary
of Rod Serling's.
And there's something about the use of heartbreaking character in incredibly unusual and often scary situations that just, you know, gets me every time. And you can look at, you know, so many episodes, because most, you know, have some incredible thing in them, and many of them are just masterpieces. But you look at The Twilight Zone and you see how often he was able to, whether he wrote them or produced them, take characters who were broken or deeply troubled, and he'd put them in situations that were so strange and so frightening. And there were two things going on. One thing was, you know, you thought what you were getting was the impact of, you know, the genre, the kind of science fiction or the sort of the twist of it. But the thing that you were really investing in was the heart of these people. So that to me was really inspiring. The other thing he was doing was he was writing about things that actually mattered to him. Mr. Serling had gotten into incredible trouble with the censors and with networks and advertisers, writing about things that really mattered, socially conscious issues, you know, race, politics. And when he did The Twilight Zone, you know, the decision he made to essentially make it about aliens instead of African Americans, you know what I mean, to take the thing that was important to him and hide it in genre allowed him to continue to write, but in allegory, about things that really were critically important. And so I think that the thing that The Twilight Zone did was connect these dramatic, sort of heart-wrenching characters with situations that were just creepy. And I think that either element without the other would never have been as impactful. But together, it was this kind of perfect kind of peanut butter cup thing where you had your chocolate, you had your peanut butter, but together it was just undeniable.
J.J. Abrams, thank you for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Dave.
J.J. Abrams speaking with our TV critic David Bianculli. Abrams' new TV series Fringe premieres tomorrow night on Fox. David Bianculli writes about television for Broadcasting and Cable Magazine and TVWorthWatching.com. You can download podcasts of our show on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. I'm Terry Gross, and we're happy to welcome John Sheehan to our staff. You've probably heard his name before in our credits because he's often worked with us as a freelancer. It will be a pleasure to have him with us full.